All right, let's dive in. Today we're going way back to 1928 with Olmsted v. United States.
1928, that's a prohibition era, right?
It is. Bootleggers, wiretaps, the whole nine yards.
I don't see the connection to digital privacy.
Well, stick with me. This case had huge implications for how we think about privacy today.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
So picture this: Roy Olmsted, former Seattle police lieutenant, now a big-time bootlegger.
Sounds like a character straight out of a movie.
Oh, he was the real deal, running a massive liquor empire.
And I'm guessing he attracted some unwanted attention?
You bet. Federal agents were on his tail, determined to bring him down.
So what did they do? Raid his speakeasies?
They went high tech, for the time at least. They tapped his phone lines.
Wiretapping, huh? That's pretty sneaky.
It was, and they listened in for months, gathering evidence.
I bet that was a treasure trove of information.
Oh, it was. And they listened in for months, gathering evidence.
I bet that was a treasure trove of information.
Oh, it was. And that's where things get legally interesting. They never actually set foot in his home or office.
Wait, what? How did they tap his phones without going into his property?
They got creative. They tapped the lines in public spaces, like basements and streets.
So the question is, was that even legal? Did they need a warrant?
Exactly. Does the Fourth Amendment protection against unreasonable searches and seizures apply to wiretapping if there's no physical trespass?
That's a tough one. The Fourth Amendment mentions persons, houses, papers, and effects, but it doesn't say anything about phone conversations.
Right, so Olmsted's lawyers argued that those wiretaps were a clear violation of his Fourth Amendment rights.
Seems like a pretty strong argument.
It does, but the Supreme Court ultimately disagreed.
Really? They sided with the government?
Yep, in a 5-4 decision. The majority opinion, written by Chief Justice Taft, relied on the trespass doctrine.
Trespass doctrine? What's that?
Basically, they stuck to a literal reading of the Fourth Amendment, focusing on physical intrusion.
So, because the agents didn't physically enter Olmsted's property, they didn't violate his Fourth Amendment rights?
That's how they saw it. They even compared phone lines to public highways.
Public highways? What does that have to do with phone calls?
They argued that conversations transmitted over phone lines are like someone shouting on a public road.
Meaning, no reasonable expectation of privacy.
You got it. But is that really a fair comparison?
I don't know. A public highway is designed for open communication, but a phone call is meant to be private.
Exactly. And what about self-incrimination?
Oh, that's a good point. The Fifth Amendment protects against that.
Right. Doesn't listening to someone's private conversations potentially force them to reveal incriminating information?
It seems like it could. Did the court address that at all?
They did. And their reasoning was a bit surprising.
I'm all ears. What did they say?
They basically argued that Olmsted chose to speak on the phone, knowing others could be listening.
So because he voluntarily spoke, they didn't see a Fifth Amendment issue.
That's the gist of it.
But that opens a can of worms, doesn't it?
It does. It raises questions about the boundaries of voluntary communication, especially in today's world,
where everything we do online is tracked and potentially intercepted.
Exactly. Is any of that truly voluntary when we don't fully understand how our data might be used?
You're hitting on a key theme here. The Olmsted decision set a precedent for how the law treats information we share, even in seemingly private settings.
And this has huge implications for digital privacy today. But despite the controversy, the trespass doctrine stood for decades.
Until Katz v. United States in 1967, right?
Bingo. But the Olmsted case wasn't a total loss. It had some pretty fiery dissenting opinions.
Dissenting opinions? So not everyone on the court agreed with the majority?
Not at all. And these dissenting voices actually foreshadowed many of the privacy debates we're having today.
Now that's what I call foreshadowing, okay? I'm ready to hear what these dissenting justices had to say. I have a feeling it's going to be good.
Oh, it is. They really went after the majority's narrow view of privacy. Especially Justice Brandeis. His dissent is legendary.
Brandeis, huh? He was a big advocate for individual rights, wasn't he?
You bet. And his dissent in Olmsted is considered one of the most important in Supreme Court history.
Okay, now you've got my attention. Let's hear it. So Justice Brandeis, you know, really championed individual privacy.
He was way ahead of his time on that, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely. He believed the Fourth Amendment should have a broader meaning.
Better than just physical intrusion.
Exactly. He talked about the right to be let alone.
Wow, that's become such a famous phrase.
It has, right? And he saw that as the most important, right?
Especially for a civilized society.
Yeah, he argued that the Fourth Amendment wasn't just about protecting spaces.
You mean like our homes and stuff?
Right, it was about something much deeper, more fundamental.
Like a right to privacy that shielded us from the government.
Exactly, and that protection should apply whether there was physical trespass or not.
So basically, he thought the majority got it totally wrong.
Yeah, he thought their view of the Fourth Amendment was way too narrow.
He understood that technology could erode privacy in ways they hadn't considered.
Oh, for sure. He was worried about new forms of surveillance.
Things that the framers of the Constitution could never have imagined.
It's almost like he was predicting the internet and all the ways we're tracked today.
Right. So what were his specific concerns? What did he actually say?
Well, obviously he didn't mention the internet, but he did talk about wiretapping.
And how it could be used to pry into people's lives.
Yeah, he even envisioned devices that could record everything in our homes.
Wow, that's pretty prophetic. Like Big Brother watching our every move?
He was basically warning about the surveillance state decades before it became reality.
That's incredible foresight. Did anyone else on the court share his concerns?
He wasn't alone. Justice Holmes also dissented.
Holmes, the fire in a crowded theater guy.
That's the one. But his reasoning was a little different from Brandeis's.
Oh. How so?
Well, Holmes agreed that the wiretapping was a step too far.
But he focused more on the ethics of the government breaking the law. Like, even if wiretapping wasn't a Fourth Amendment violation, it was still wrong.
Exactly. He thought it undermined the entire system of justice.
So the ends don't justify the means, even for the government.
That was his point. He had this really powerful line in his dissent.
I think I've heard it. If the government becomes a lawbreaker,
it breeds contempt for law. It invites every man to become a law unto himself. It invites anarchy.
Wow, that's heavy stuff. He was basically saying that the government sets the example.
And if the government breaks the law, it sends a dangerous message.
It makes you wonder about all the warrantless surveillance programs today.
And the erosion of civil liberties in the name of security.
Yeah, it's a slippery slope for sure. But wait, there's another dissent we need to talk about?
Oh, right. Justice Butler's dissent. It often gets overlooked.
Overshadowed by the big names, huh? What did Butler have to say?
He agreed that the wiretapping was wrong, but he took a different approach.
Didn't the majority already decide that wiretapping wasn't a search?
They did, but Butler challenged their whole definition of a search.
How could he do that? They were pretty clear about physical intrusion.
Well, he argued that focusing only on physical intrusion was too narrow.
Interesting. What does he think a search should include?
Any action that interfered with someone's intended private use of something.
So it's not just about physical boundaries, but about violating a reasonable expectation of privacy.
You got it. It's like he was anticipating things like email surveillance and data collection.
Wow, he was way ahead of the curve. He understood that technology changes everything.
Absolutely. He was saying the Fourth Amendment should adapt to those changes.
That's a really insightful point. But even with these powerful dissents,
the trespass doctrine from Olmsted remained the law for decades.
It's amazing how those dissenting voices foreshadowed the future, though.
They really did. They saw that privacy needed stronger protection in a changing world.
And their ideas eventually led to Katz v. United States in 1967.
Right. That's the case that really turned things around.
It introduced the reasonable expectation of privacy standard, didn't it?
Exactly. And that's had a huge impact on how we view privacy today.
So in a way, Katz was a victory for those dissenting justices from Olmsted.
It was like their vision finally came to fruition almost 40 years later.
Their arguments about the need to protect privacy in the face of new technology?
They were finally heard. It's a great example of how legal thinking can evolve.
Okay, so we've got Olmsted, the dissents, and then Katz changes everything.
It's a fascinating story, isn't it? And it all started with a bootlegger and some wiretaps.
And it leads us right into the digital age. This is why Olmsted still matters today.
It shows how legal principles can be stretched and reinterpreted to fit new challenges.
Now, I'm really curious about Katz. What were the facts of that case?
Well, it involved a guy named Charles Katz, a public phone booth, and some illegal bets.
And the FBI was listening in, right? But this time, they got caught.
They did. And the Supreme Court used that case to redefine privacy in America.
All right, so Katz v. United States. Big turning point, you said. Tell me more about this case.
So the FBI was trying to catch this guy, Charles Katz.
Making illegal bets, wasn't they?
That's right. They placed a listening device on a public phone booth.
A phone booth. Those things are practically antiques now.
They were pretty common back then. Anyway, the FBI argued that because the device was outside the booth, it was fine.
They thought there was no physical intrusion, so no Fourth Amendment violation.
Exactly. They were still relying on the trespass doctrine from Olmsted.
Trying to use that loophole again, huh? But I bet the court wasn't having it this time.
Nope, not at all. This time they rule in favor of privacy.
Finally. So they overturned Olmsted.
Yep. In a 7-1 decision, they said the Fourth Amendment protects people, not places.
That's a pretty significant shift. What was their reasoning behind that?
Justice Harlan, who wrote the majority opinion, said that even though the phone booth was public, Katz had a reasonable expectation of privacy.
Inside the booth, at least. Makes sense to me.
It does, right? It's like, yeah, anyone could walk by and see him in there, but his conversations were meant to be private.
So they were saying that the Fourth Amendment's protection isn't limited to physical spaces.
Right. It can also apply to situations where someone has a reasonable expectation of privacy, even if they're in public.
Okay, I see where this is going. This reasonable expectation of privacy idea It's huge.
Absolutely. It completely changed how we approach privacy, especially with digital technology.
Because now it's not just about physical intrusion, it's about accessing information in a way that violates that expectation of privacy.
Exactly. CATS laid the groundwork for how we think about things like email surveillance, data collection, all of that.
So are we saying that CATS solved all our privacy problems?
Not quite. The digital world throws some curveballs.
Like what?
Well, our digital footprint is so vast and scattered, data's everywhere.
So even if we assume things are private, like our emails, our browsing history...
The reality is way more complicated. It's tough to know who has access to that information, how it's being used.
And whether we even have a reasonable expectation of privacy in those situations.
It's a tough question, and it makes it really hard for courts to apply this standard.
Because the digital world keeps changing, new technologies popping up all the time.
It's a moving target, for sure, but the courts are trying to keep up.
They've had a few decades to figure things out since CATS. Any progress?
Oh yeah, there have been some important cases. Riley v. California in 2014, for example.
That one was about searching cell phones, right?
It was, and the Supreme Court said that digital data deserves strong protection.
Okay, that's good to hear. So even though it's a challenge, the courts are recognizing the importance of digital privacy.
They're trying to adapt, just like the Fourth Amendment itself had to adapt.
Wow, we've covered so much today, from bootleggers and wiretaps to cell phones and the internet.
It's a long and winding road, this fight for privacy.
But it all started with that fundamental question. What is a reasonable expectation of privacy?
And that question is more important than ever today in the age of data collection and digital surveillance.
It's a question we all need to be thinking about as individuals and as a society.
What do we want the future of privacy to look like? What are we willing to fight for?
Those are big questions with no easy answers. But this has been a fantastic deep dive into the legal history of privacy.
I'm glad you found it insightful.
Absolutely. It's given me a lot to think about. Thanks for sharing your expertise with us today.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks for having me.